Hello, and welcome to Crossroads, the infrastructure podcast. With so much interest in the energy and infrastructure sector today, is it possible that an entire segment of the capital stack is being overlooked by investors? I'm Chuck Stanley, Senior Energy Reporter for InfraLogic, and today I'm joined by Chris Creed, Managing Partner and Co-Head of Credit and Capital Solutions for Galvanize. He says he and his team have identified a critically underserved and overlooked financing need within the global energy and infrastructure sector, a need Galvanize aims to serve with its credit strategy. Chris previously served as Chief Investment Officer for the Department of Energy's Loan Programs Office. Before that, he was a Managing Director and Portfolio Manager at Goldman Sachs. Chris, thanks so much for joining me today.
Chuck, it's an absolute pleasure to join you.
Now, our main talk of discussion today is going to be the growth credit opportunities in the energy infrastructure that you've identified in a recent white paper for Galvanize. But I wonder if you could start by talking a little bit about your firm and its broad view of sustainable investment. Many listeners will likely recognize names associated with firm like founders Katie Hall and Tom Steyer, as well as the firm's co-chair, John Kerry, former Secretary of State and U.S. Climate Envoy, and former Maryland Congressman John Delaney. And I should note, Tom Steyer has stepped away from Galvanize amid his run for governor of California. The Galvanize team has a very strong pedigree in terms of asset management, finance, and climate change mitigation expertise. At a time when we're hearing less overall emphasis on sustainability from infrastructure investors and more about the need to meet energy demand and deliver returns to LPs, Chris, I wonder if you could give me a bit of an overview on Galvanize's view of the interplay between sustainability and finance and how that shapes your firm's strategy.
Yeah, absolutely, Chuck. We're extremely grateful for the leadership that Katie Hall and, while he was here, Tom Steyer gave us, not only that leadership, but the vision. The Galvanize thesis is that there exists excess returns in investments across the energy innovation and future of energy spaces. What they did was create a destination for talent, a comprehensive company whose mandate it is to create investment strategies, support those investment strategies, and cultivate investments across those sectors. What's unique, I think, about Galvanize is that on the one hand, we created the company in advance of having the assets to manage. Tom and Katie believed so strongly in this thesis that they invested heavily on the platform that all of our investment strategies sit on. That includes the things that you would normally associate with an asset manager: fund accounting, compliance, investor relations, etc. But also, and uniquely for us in our sector, we spent time and effort building up a world-class science and technology group to help all of our investors understand the technology and science behind the technology of the companies and projects we're investing in, an impact team to help understand, quantify, and give our investors a distilled understanding of the impact of the investments we are making, and a strategy team. In a world where the rules are subject to change at all times, having a strategy team that is able to analyze the world and give us an understanding on things like tariff policy or regulatory policy is a huge advantage. And so they built those shared resources long before the strategy teams got up and running. We have five strategies at Galvanize. I'm super excited to co-lead our credit strategy with John Delaney, but I know we're going to spend a lot of time talking about that. So very quickly, the other four strategies that we have are a private equity focused on venture and growth equity investments. And we have a real estate group that purchases real estate investments and takes them from dirty to green, one of, if not the most unique strategies that we have. We have a public equity strategy that's run out of London and a early seed venture strategy. All of us benefit from the Galvanize platform. And I think the other thing that's unique about Galvanize is that we don't just sit in the silos. Our teams are constantly working together. We have opportunities to share ideas, to pressure test and, importantly, create opportunities to source deals in an even larger network. And I think that's, the special sauce that Galvanize really brings to the table.
And I wonder, just to follow up on that, if you could speak a bit to where sustainability and concerns about climate change mitigation fit within that broader strategy and that structure.
I don't view these as different things. So the Galvanize thesis is that there are excess returns by investing in sustainable investments. And so if we do our job, we get the alpha because of the impact. And I think that is a reframing that we wish other investors would also take. The opportunity is not to invest in sustainable investments. The opportunity is to make a lot of money for our investors because the investments in sustainable energy future, energy innovation, the future of power, have these excess returns because of the important tailwinds and investment theses that we see in the marketplace today. So I don't view these as in conflict. I actually view them as the same objective.
And obviously you'll be pursuing those objectives from the credit side. You joined Galvanize about a year or so ago, and we've spoken for Infralogic, reported there on how your major focus right now is opportunities in growth credit. I wonder if you could speak a bit for listeners about what you define as growth credit and why that's such an important opportunity in the infrastructure and energy sector right now.
Absolutely. One of the things that I think that the private equity industry does that is better than the private credit industry is create a taxonomy for investors to understand what component of the private equity market do they invest in. So you have the pre-seed and seed investments, you have your venture, you have your growth equity, you have your leveraged buyout equity, and then eventually you get public equity markets. In the private credit markets, we're just now beginning to understand that there should be a taxonomy within private credit. And the way that we define growth credit is very similar to, I think, what the private equity business would call growth companies. But let me give you my definition of growth companies are those companies that are creating a product where the marginal revenue is greater than the marginal cost, but that they may not be at the scale that they think their steady state company should be. So we're well past the venture stage, but we're not yet to steady state earnings. And I think that's a helpful credit metric. So if you're not yet marginal revenue greater than marginal cost, or certainly if you are pre-revenue, then I would put into the venture debt side of the world and not really something we're overly focused on. What we're focused on is the growth sector. We see a lot of opportunity in the energy space in growth, and that growth credit market represents a really big opportunity for us. The other thing I will say is energy in particular lends itself to credit at the growth stage of the maturation cycle of companies. And at the risk of being overly redactive to your audience, which is very well informed, I think there are three things you need for credit. The first is you need a management team that has excellence and capability to execute on a well-thought-out business plan. You need cash flows available to service your debt, CFADs, and you need assets of the company which you can take a lien on that would act as collateral for the loan you are giving. You need a strong management team, debt service coverage ratio, and LTV. And in many sectors of the economy, the growth stage of companies, many of those three things, or one or two of those three things, are not present. However, in the energy, and in particular, energy infrastructure market, they are. These tend to be rather capital-intensive projects and companies. The availability of regular, repeatable, and sometimes even contracted revenues exists. And so it opens up this area of investing, growth credit, in the sector that we think has the most interesting opportunities. This structural cycle, driven by, yes, AI demand, but also the electrification of things, reshoring of manufacturing, general economic growth, et cetera, that is bringing up the need for more investments in the energy infrastructure, is allowing for these growing companies to emerge, need this kind of capital, and do it in a way with a pretty long, pretty strong tailwind behind.
I think speaking about private credit today, it's definitely a timely topic. People are talking about it a lot in the news and in the markets. JP Morgan recently announced that it was restricting some lending to private credit funds. And then Jamie Dimon of JP Morgan not that long ago gave a fairly infamous quote about the potential for finding cockroaches in the private credit sector. But you differentiate between some of those more active sectors within the private credit market and this growth credit opportunity that you guys are focused on. I wonder if you can speak a little bit about the different varieties of private credit and how you feel like growth credit is differentiated amongst those.
With a wry smirk on my face, I will jokingly, not jokingly, say that as a finance professional in New York City, I am legally obligated to always agree with Jamie Dimon at all times. But I think that I might clarify what I think Jamie Dimon, when he says there are cockroaches in the private credit market, I think he is talking about the LevFin market. One of the things that resulted from that very famous quote back in October was a equally famous response from Mark Rowan of Apollo saying, well, hold on, the private credit market also has the asset finance market, which Athene and other insurance companies are very large investors in, and that's different. And he's right. When you look at data from the Federal Reserve Board, you'll see three large components of the private credit market: the LevFin private credit, the asset finance private credit, and then the refinancing of those two. For some reason, the Fed has the refi as a third bucket. And then you'll see a very small 5-6% slice that's growth credit. And so I think that this sort of completes the picture that Jamie Dimon and Mark Rowan were talking about back in October. And I also think that helps asset allocators and private credit investors think about how they might want to complete their own private credit investments and gain access to maybe a part of the private credit market that has been underinvested in and might provide a good portfolio effect, higher returns, that kind of stuff. I will say the other piece that we should talk about is the format that investors are investing in private credit. Because as you and I sit here today, we've seen a number of articles about private credit funds that are offering some form of liquidity for investors have had to legally, but reduce the amount of liquidity that they're offering investors. And I think that brings up an interesting point because the structure of how you are providing investors access to private credit is very important. Because on the one hand, all investors want liquidity, right? They want to be able to rebalance their portfolio up or down, and the liquidity terms of investments are important. On the other hand, by their very nature, private credit investments have less liquidity. And so one of the other benefits that we see of growth credit is they tend to be shorter in spread duration or duration. And that's simply a function of the use cases. They tend to help bridge tax credits, warehouse assets for more appropriate term debt, develop or construct certain projects until they reach earnings stable levels where then they get refinanced. And so whilst the form of the fund or offering might not be able to get investors the kind of liquidity they would want, the shorter spread duration could at least provide some of the stability that they need.
And what we've spoken in the past, it sounds to me like you feel like a lot of those strong use cases for growth credit have been served up to this point disproportionately by equity. Is that fair to say? And if so, I wonder if you could speak a bit about the risks to both borrowers and lenders when they have to turn to equity solutions for needs that might be better met by credit.
Goldman Sachs put out a report a few months ago, and I guess now, maybe a year ago, that showed that in the sustainability space, $600 billion of equity had been raised and $50 billion of debt had been raised. And I'm not sure what the ratio should be, but that's the wrong ratio. And on the one hand, I think that there's this interesting supply and demand dynamic. On the other hand, I think that a lot of the equity investors are seeing what we're seeing, which is a real opportunity to make money if they can get their profitable companies and projects to the scale that they want to get them. And so the question is, how do they do that? Once you have de-risked the project or company to the level where debt is at least available, do you want to take our kind of debt or do you want to use equity? And there's pluses and minuses for all of that. The obvious is that we're going to take a lien on assets and the company or the equity of the company might not want to do that yet. On the other hand, it's non-dilutive or minimally dilutive, and so they can get some lip. And yes, it's often the case that I'm asked by LPs, who are my biggest competitors? And whilst we definitely do have competitors in the growth credit space, the one that we run into the most is the equity sponsor in the project or company world.
And I mentioned at the top of the program that you come to Galvanize from the Loan Programs Office. And the mission there, particularly under the Biden administration, seems to echo a lot of the same objectives laid out by Galvanize, provide relatively low-risk access to capital for companies looking to upscale their activities within the energy transition. How much did your time with the LPO inform your approach that you're taking today with Galvanize? And maybe what sort of lessons do you bring with you from that?
Certainly, I'm very proud of the work that we did at the Department of Energy. And the congressional mandate that we were given was to help catalyze energy innovation and energy transition in the United States. That's very similar to the opportunity set that we see today. And strong underwriting, good sourcing, working with good people. I don't know that they were unique to the Loan Programs Office, but they were there. And in many cases, the opportunities that we are seeing are similar to the opportunities that we saw at the LPO. There were some differences too. The LPO managed more than one loan program. And in fact, a lot of times when people think about the LPO, they think about the 1703 Innovative Clean Energy Program. And that's probably the one with the most corollaries to what we're doing here at Galvanize. But in that program, we also didn't take technology risk. And that, I think, is very similar to our approach here at Galvanize. Where they really differ is in magnitude. The LPO tended to do loans that were much larger and longer tenor. You would construct and own through payback, whereas the kinds of projects that we're doing are smaller in overall scale and shorter in overall duration. So the objective is not a sort of A to Z financing, but a let's bridge you to, let's get you to, let's construct to a stable place where you can refinance that debt into a different capital. The other thing I will say is we are also very thoughtful about what risks we want to take and avoiding those risks that we don't want to take. And that was very similar to the conversations that we had at the LPO as well.
And you mentioned there that you guys are operating on the lower end of the dollar spectrum with the opportunities you're concentrated on. Is this a sector that works better for investors and lenders that are wanting to look further on that side of the scale? Or are there opportunities for some of the larger guys that prefer to deal in much larger volumes to come to the space as well?
There are opportunities in larger ticket sizes, but I think for the most part, what we have found now, we could be self-selecting because we're looking for our strike zone, right? We're looking for the pitch that we could hit. But I do think there are more opportunities in that $50 to $150 million lending size. And I think that makes sense because, again, when you think about the maturation cycle and where we are in that cycle, the growth stage companies tend not to be that large yet.
And so it sounds like the opportunities really are lean towards that side of the market, if not concentrated. Are there other barriers or dynamics that have kept lenders out of this space or have led to this space being underserved?
Certainly, I think it's an expensive place to be in the private credit market. The line that my partner John Delaney uses is it's private credit with a private equity process. The Lev Fin market has a lot of syndicated loans, both on the middle market and broadly syndicated side, that aid in your ability to source. The asset finance market has asset finance specialists that help aggregate and distribute those ABF loans. And then the very large companies often buy operating companies that themselves generate those asset-backed debt deals. In the growth credit side, you have to go find the companies. You have to go get it. And I think this is where I really like the way that we thoughtfully put together our team. And it's an opportunity for me to gush a little bit about the team that we put together. So in addition to myself, as I mentioned, John Delaney co-runs the business with me. John, as you said, was a former Maryland congressman. He also was a private credit entrepreneur twice over. He, with, by the way, the financial assistance of Tom Steyer, founded two different companies, one in the 90s, focused on healthcare, one in the 2000s, called Capital Source, which was a middle market lender. So John's got a tremendous private credit eye and a very large Rolodex. In addition to the two of us, we have two other partners, Suresh Vasan, who was with me at DOE, and then prior to that, had time, significant time at Lazard and at GE Capital, GE Energy Financial Services, and he started his career at Enron. And in particular, Enron and GE Capital have a wonderful alumni network because, you know, those two entities that were doing energy lending and are no longer doing energy lending for reasons that have nothing to do with energy lending, those individuals are now everywhere in the marketplace. And our fourth partner, Megan Pasricha, longtime MD at Riverstone, Carlyle before that, she's also the founder of Women in Climate Investment and Finance, a wonderful affinity network that your listeners should join if they want, and men and women. It's a 5,000-person affinity network that just is bringing together people with that climate finance eye. All four of us have these orthogonal networks in the market that can help us find those companies, bring in our relationships, and use that to figure out what are the best growth deals that we can invest in. And that is greatly augmented by the Galvanized platform. Because as I mentioned earlier, we create this company that is doing climate, energy, future of power investments and known to be good at it. And that helps magnify our sourcing networks through our other investment verticals, the platform of scientists, technologists, impact assessors, and researchers, as well as just the brand name itself. And so I think that is maybe how we're able to do this, even when I'm also telling you, Chuck, that it's not something that a lot of people are doing. And I want to be appropriately thankful. Like, I think that the platform allows us to do this in a way that is scalable, even though maybe you need to aggregate a bunch of 50 to 150s together. And I think that's how we're doing.
With the way you describe sort of the importance of going out through these broad networks and really finding companies that sort of work for the lending profile that you're seeking, you spoke at the top of the program about the importance of, you know, quality of management teams. With that upfront investment of labor and seeking out who's going to work for you as a partner, is this a process that leans heavily on the opportunity for follow-on investments ongoing, or does this need to be a repeat customer business?
Interestingly, on the credit side, we've been using the term capital solution since the beginning of our process or journey of developing this private credit offering for investors. And this is because what we're going to need to do is not view the companies that we're lending to as borrowers. We should start to view them as portfolio companies, as partners. We want to provide a capital solution to them by being a financing partner. And that requires not only expertise on our end, but flexibility and innovation in order to accomplish that. And if we do it right, they don't become repeat borrowers because we help them grow to the level that they want to be at to access the larger, deeper waters of credit capital available, whether that be the middle market bank loan or broadly syndicated bank loan markets, the insurance markets, or eventually the public credit markets. And so what we want is our borrowers to continue their maturation journey, get to cheaper, more stable, more long-term capital structures. And then we then have to go find the next borrowers. That's the goal.
I would definitely like to hear more about this, and I hope you will come back soon and join us again. Chris, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Chuck, thank you so much for the opportunity to chat with you and your audience. Would love to come back whenever, and we wish you and everybody on your podcast the absolute best.
That is all for this edition of Crossroads, the Infrastructure Podcast. Please remember to like, subscribe, and rate us on the podcast application of your choice. I'm Chuck Stanley for Infralogic. Thanks so much for listening. Join us next time.